Welcome to Sustainability Bridges, a EuroCiF podcast that aims to build bridges between policymakers, investors, academics, and civil society around the theme of sustainable investment. EuroCiF, the European Sustainable Investment Forum, is the leading pan-European association promoting sustainable finance and investment at the European level. In these podcasts, EuroCiF's Executive Director invites distinguished guests for a 30-minute conversation on current events shaping the sustainable investment community.
Hello everyone, my name is Aleksandra Palińska and I am the Executive Director of EuroCiF. For this episode of Sustainability Bridges, I am honored to be joined by Professor Lokem Morel, one of the world's best-known privacy and cyber advisors, who is frequently called upon by some of the world's largest multinational organizations to tackle their global privacy and ethical challenges. Professor Morel is a lawyer in the global privacy and security team of Morrison & Foerster and member of its ESG steering committee. She is also professor of global technology and law at Tilburg University, a member of the Dutch Cybersecurity Council, and a member of the Monitoring Committee of the Dutch Corporate Governance Code. Professor Morel is also the leading global expert on binding corporate rules and authored a textbook which is considered the best publication on this topic. Together, we are going to discuss the importance and benefits of collecting and disclosing corporate data on diversity, equity and inclusion, so-called DEI, and how to carry this out in compliance with GDPR. We will also talk about how to overcome the challenges associated with collecting and disclosing such information. Dear Professor Morel, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
To start with, could you please tell us about your background in privacy law and your work with multinational organizations in relation to corporate disclosure?
Yes, of course. Maybe an old example and a more recent example on diversity disclosures. My first experience with corporate disclosures relates already a long time back, 2005, I think. Together with five large multinationals, I worked with European data protection authorities to develop a new system to facilitate data transfers within global multinational groups of companies. For that, the companies would adopt a global privacy policy that was called binding corporate rules, and that would ensure a level, an adequate level of protection of personal data within the global group. We would create a kind of safe haven for the data. And that system was clearly based on the accountability principle, and the data protection authorities agreed to this form of self-regulation, but wanted the companies to implement internal and external audits, annual updating to the DPAs, mandatory reporting to the boards. And that was really the first time that I thought about how to choose the topics for reporting, both internally and externally, based on the principle, what you get what you expect. I then wrote my PhD on this form of self-regulation, and I studied all the literature on accountability, and it became very clear to me that true accountability of also the boards require that you publish your results so you're also accountable to the public. That requirement was initially included in the General Data Protection Regulation as we have it now, the GDPR, but that requirement was dropped in the final version. I think that is a big mistake. Sunlight is really the best of disinfectants. Anyway, a more relevant example and recent is that I worked on an update of the Dutch Corporate Governance Code as a member of the Monitoring Committee. And I'm happy to report that the Dutch updated code now includes a requirement for Dutch listed companies to have a company-wide diversity, equity and inclusion policy, as well as mandatory reporting, public reporting on targets and results. So this is a bit of an overview of what I've been doing.
Great, thank you. Could you please tell us what are the advantages of collecting and disclosing diversity, equity, and inclusion data for the reporting companies and investors? Can that contribute to promoting more equal treatment and inclusive corporate cultures?
Yeah, a resounding yes. Maybe a personal story here. In 2000, I was a partner at Linklaters London, And I was also on their diversity committee. And we tried to convince management, it's early days of diversity issues here for women to and minority to get to the partnership. We tried to convince them with reporting of incidents, sharing personal experience, but it was just hard to make it stick. And at the time, I headed up the global ICT practice, and I assisted Linklaters with implementing their global SAP software. And that was the first time the firm recorded all the performance assessment data of all the associates. And, you know, when we did that for a few years, the analytics showed that men and women scored on average the same for the first 3-4 years when they joined the firm. But in the fifth year, you know, the assessment criteria changed because they were assessed, associates were assessed for leadership, for criteria for leadership. And that included more woolly requirements like, do you have presence? Are you convincing for clients? And you could see that some departments, the men and women were scored the same, but others, suddenly the women's scores dropped 20% lower. And when women moved from one department to the other, you know, their scores went lower or higher depending on the department. So it was really clear that that was subjective more than objective. And also women from different ethnic backgrounds scored even lower. So when we had those hard facts, you know, management was quickly convinced. At the time, you know, there were a lot of banks sued for discrimination. And that, you know, triggered a full program to counter workplace discrimination. The firm signed public commitments to improve diversity, reported on KPIs, and it really was a turning point. I later returned to the Netherlands and my old firm, and I saw that the lack of this type of data prevented my Dutch firm really to acknowledge the issue, but also pinpoint where things got off track. So in answer to your question, can they monitoring prevent discrimination? Yes. And potential litigation? Yes. In 2002, and I can't help myself, but I want to quote an article in the Harvard Business Review I read. And their main message on this point was, the crucial question corporate leaders have to ask is this: do we really want to wait until after we've been sued to learn that our day record is problematic? So yes, it can help prevent discrimination. But it can also be positive effects. Huh? Companies can also derive monetary gains in terms of lower staff fluctuations, better image, improved financial results. And I think the answer is yes. Once you get it right, it is actually a competitive advantage. For instance, my current law firm, Morrison & Foerster, is really a diversity champion. It has one of the best diversity records, not only on gender, but also cultural diversity. And, you know, anecdotal, but, you know, this last week I assisted one of our summer associates, and I said, why are you, she's from Harvard, and I said, why did you join MOFO? And she said, well, you know, one of my professors at Harvard said, look, you're from a diverse ethnic background and go to MOFO, as they, you know, they will give you the best chance of success in your career. So, but you're not there if you can hire diverse people. Eh? It is really not easy to get it right. You need to continuously monitor and evaluate your day efforts, because I've seen many efforts that seem, you know, a good idea, but actually are meaningless or even counterproductive. There's quite some research around that. Very simple example is informal mentoring. That is known to be an important factor for internal promotions, but it's mostly available to the men mentoring the men, so less available for women and minorities. So organizations try to set up formal internal mentoring programs to address the imbalance, and they want to monitor then the participation to make sure that, you know, it's actually picked up by the right people, because if not, the program actually increases the inequalities.
Thank you. These are very useful insights Indeed. And I think it's very good to, you know, kind of showcase those indeed, you know, positive examples and actually the advantages to the companies that can, you know, basically derive them from actually, you know, yes, collecting, monitoring, you know, aspects related to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and basically, you know, build on that also to put forward some positive, good, you know, policies and create some programs that can actually promote that. I understand there are many companies that have adopted so-called DEI, so diversity, equity, and inclusion policies to promote indeed the diversity, equity, and inclusion in the organizations. However, I hear that some of these companies may be hesitant to monitor actually such data in the EU in view of actually the, well, still relatively recent EU General Data Protection Regulation and this kind of a, you know, seemingly persistent myth that it may prohibit collecting information on, for instance, ethnic background of the corporate workforce. Earlier this year, you have published an important article tackling this myth. Could you please elaborate on this?
Yes, I wrote the article as it really irks me that when people say that GDPR prohibits collection of ethnic background data for DEI monitoring purposes. It's just not true. I think actually it's the other way around, where discrimination, lack of equal opportunity and pay gaps at the workplace are pervasive. Monitoring of DEI data is a prerequisite for employers to be able to comply with employee anti-discrimination and equality laws. A bit of history, yeah? For historic reasons, mostly due to World War II, the collection of racial and ethnic data is considered very sensitive in many European member states. And the GDPR has a specific regime for collecting this type of data. And the whole underlying assumption is that collecting and processing such sensitive data increases the risk of discrimination. But here it is actually, again, the other way around. Now, racial and background data are visible, as a matter of fact, to recruiters and managers. Individuals from minority groups may be discriminated against without recording any data, because you can see it. Yeah? There's no need to record the data. It's therefore only by recording the data that potential existing discrimination may be revealed, and you can actually do something about it. It's therefore not surprising that all the minority interest groups in Europe, like ANAR, that actually represent those minorities, actively advocate for such collection of the data and monitoring. They are not complaining about their privacy. They're complaining about the lack of insights in the discrimination. If there are any concerns of these groups, it is about the fact that they often do not feel represented in the categories of the data they companies and governments collect. Often they are asked, like, are you a first or second generation migrant? But what if you're a person of color and you're a third generation? You may well encounter discrimination, even if you're not second migration, but third generation migrant. By now, all the EU institutions and all the international institutions have unequivocally said that collection of DEI data is indispensable for monitoring and reporting in order to fight discrimination. And the EU institutions also explicitly confirmed that the GDPR doesn't prohibit collection of DEI data for monitoring, but instead establishes conditions under which you can do that in a proper way. Yeah, you need to implement privacy by design, like pseudonymization of the data. Yeah, there needs to be proper security, access only by two specific diversity officers for analytics, etc., etc. So at the risk of stating the obvious, invoking the GDPR based on privacy concerns of individuals to avoid detecting discrimination exactly against these individuals is really contrary to the GDPR's purpose. Yeah, the GDPR is about how to preserve privacy while you protect individuals against discrimination. And that is well possible. If companies now hide behind GDPR, I feel it's more a convenient argument to avoid scrutiny of their workplace rather than really true concerns about the privacy of their employees. So yes, that's why I wrote the article.
Thank you for sharing that. What is the best way to collect equality related data in compliance with GDPR and human rights principles?
Yeah, a bit of background here because it's a complicated legal environment. Currently, the regulation of collection of data is mainly left to the member states. Here we have EU anti-discrimination and equality laws, but they do not impose an obligation to collect the data, but also do not prohibit collecting such data for those purposes. So in absence of that type of European rules, specific requirements or prohibitions, the collection of that data is governed by the GDPR. And the GDPR provides for discretionary powers for the member states to introduce in their local laws a legal basis for collecting that data for monitoring purposes. But in practice, most member states didn't do that. They didn't use that opportunity, with some exceptions. But as a consequence, collection and processing of data is currently taking place on a voluntary basis where employees are asked to fill out surveys based on self-identification. And that is fully in line with the GDPR, which allows organizations to process that data based on the explicit consent of the individuals concerned. And it is also in line with human rights principles, which require that the data collection process should be based on self-identification, participation, and data protection. So if you, as a company, want to collect that data, you need to do it based on a voluntary basis, which implies the explicit consent. And for consent of employees to be valid, the participation should be truly voluntary. They should have a free choice to do it or not to do it. If it is required to give your ethnic background to participate in all types of positive action initiatives, it is refusing has a detriment effect. Consent is not valid. So to ensure it is freely given consent, the voluntary nature should be twofold. First, employees should be able to complete the survey or not, completely voluntary, but also the survey itself should include possibilities like that they respond with an equivalent of "I choose not to answer." Further, the responses of the survey should not be visible to the employer on an individual basis, like completed or not, or etc. That is what we also call a privacy by design measure. Then, proper self-identification means that you, as an employer, do not set the categories. You can have a drop-down menu with suggested categories, but there also should be an option for free responses, but also to allow for more identifying multiple identities. And participation means that the setting of the categories should be a bottom-up process where the employees and their works councils have a say in how data is collected and how it is monitored. For example, in setting the categories to ensure that minority employees actually recognize themselves in the categories. And that may well vary per country. Well, data protection principles are really the ones like data security, data minimization, privacy by design, making sure that the data is immediately pseudonymized and the data is only available to a limited number of diversity employees to generate statistics only. I hope you see that to do this in a proper way, companies require the full trust and cooperation of their employees to be able to do that. And if you introduce that as a company and it feels countercultural, or it is really abrupt, or a box ticking exercise that is not likely to result in meaningful change, I tell you, employees will not fill it out. But if they trust you and you work with their works councils, and you know, collection of the data is truly based on we measure what we treasure, then employees will do it. Actually, practice shows that there is a certain tipping point where employees are proud to self-identify to contribute to the daily statistics. So it's quite a process, but if you get it right, they will do it.
Great. Thank you so much. Very insightful. Are there differences between the EU member states that companies should watch out for?
Yes, yes, there are. The more south in Europe, the more resistant the culture is to monitor ethnic diversity, even though it is allowed based on self-identity and in compliance with GDPR. It's just against their culture. So you need to do more work. But most difficult is France. French law actually doesn't recognize that people can be categorized based on their race or ethnicity, and there's an actual prohibition to process race and ethnicity data, and that is confirmed and reaffirmed by the French Constitutional Court. It seems noble, huh? We don't recognize, race, everybody is the same, but it's also very unhelpful. I always say unawareness doesn't equal fairness, and that is also recognized by the Data Protection Authority of France, where they, you know, allowed in a big project, they said, okay, maybe you cannot process race, but you are allowed to ask questions that are not directly about what is your race, but more objective criteria relating to what is your geographical or cultural origin, so birthplace, but also country of birth or your parents or grandparents, your name, nationality, mother tongue. So if you ask those questions, you will get a good idea about ethnicity. But for me, it seems semantics. I think individuals are well able to self-identify. But I hope you see that this requires you to tune your questionnaires according to country as well, or even region.
Thank you. Can you explain whether and what implications the GDPR requirements may have for the corporate sustainability-related disclosures, for instance, under the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive?
Yes, GDPR always applies, regardless what the CSRD says, for instance. So when it comes into force, the GDPR requirements apply. So for me, not much changes how you collect that data and report on it. And once the CSRD has been implemented in all the national laws of the member states, maybe collecting data will be required for the mandatory ESG disclosures. And then it will be permitted, is already permitted under GDPR. But don't forget, companies do not have this data yet, so they will have to go to their employees to ask. And once you have to ask, it should be on a voluntary basis, self-identification. So for me, the process I just described, how you do it, will not change.
Great, thank you. Now, speaking a little bit more about corporate sustainability reporting, both at EU and global level. So, well, as there are initiatives both indeed at EU and global level. So at the global level, you know, there are standards developed by ISB, which at least, you know, for now have been focused more on climate-related aspects, but they are also looking into whether in the future develop standards on human capital and other social matters. In the meantime, well, in Europe, we have the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, which is to be reinforced by the European Sustainability Reporting Standards, for which the first set is currently being finalized, and actually with the application of these rules already kicking in January next year, at least for the largest companies. So what are your thoughts about diversity-related disclosures within the European Sustainability Reporting Standards? I mean, looking at how things have evolved, I mean, for now, I mean, okay, we haven't seen the final delegated act yet, as it will be published, we understand, on 28th of July. However, based on the latest final draft delegated act, we understand that in terms of diversity related disclosures, what will be included is, you know, some basic requirements like to report on policies implemented against discrimination and gender diversity on boards. However, actually, in the earlier EFRAG draft proposals from April last year, well, there have been actually more requirements, for instance, also looking at the ethnicity, race, etc. I mean, do you think it's a missed opportunity that actually these standards do not go further on this?
Yeah. Well, I reviewed the draft delegated act as it stands now, and I understand that it won't change much before it's published at the end of July. But we will have to see, obviously. But I see that the commission, as compared to the EFRAG version, changed around the requirements, put them in a different place. But if I look at them, they are still, you know, materially the same, in the sense that you need to report on all your different policies, but also how you progress on them. And if you want to report on that, you need to collect the data in the first place, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to report on your targets for equality in the workplace. So in that sense, I'm okay. You know, could it be better? Yes, of course. But, you know, it will require quite some substantive reporting. But the big difference with the compared to the EFRAG system is that the European Commission made all the disclosure requirements subject to a materiality assessment. In other words, if a company doesn't consider the relevant topic a material risk to the companies, they don't have to comply with the reporting requirements. And companies also do not have to provide a reasoning why they think they do not consider the reporting topic material. Under the draft EFRAG standards, it was completely the other way around. The assumption was that all the topics were material and the company had to provide a reasoning why it wasn't material. And that, well, you know, I hope you see that that is a major difference. And the commission now takes a bit of an all or nothing approach, which I find very unhelpful. You would expect at least everybody to have to report on certain basic requirements, yeah, like do you have DEI policies or not? If a company in a sensitive area doesn't have any DEI policies, by now that is a red flag, and that is relevant to investors and society at large. So another issue is, for me, I mean, there's no guidance how the materiality assessment should look like that companies are for the diversity disclosure requirements. And here you can argue two ways. Eh? You can say, well, discrimination is all research. Discrimination is pervasive in the workplace, everywhere. A lot of companies, most companies, have all types of DEI policies to address that. So is the conclusion then it is a material topic for all companies? Or can companies say, look, I have many DEI policies, I have a proper program, so I manage the risk, and therefore it is not material to me? I don't know where this will end up, but I think this whole materiality assessment, where you do not have to report on why you think it is not material to you, is, for me, it will become a black box, which undermines the whole system. But I'm curious how you think about that.
Well, I mean, I think these are very good points and observations. I mean, as yours, if we're, of course, also kind of concerned, especially about the fact that, well, according to EFRAG proposals for the first set of European sustainability reporting standards, there was also a certain number of indicators that were supposed to be considered as always material, hence mandatory, even if, you know, the biggest, I would say, amount of disclosures were subject to materiality assessment anyway. But, you know, the always material ones included, for instance, also SFDR-related indicators, but also, you know, climate benchmarks and Pillar 3. So basically in line with various other sustainable finance requirements, but indeed, you know, also across the different range, and, you know, which at the end of the day, we thought would be also helpful to, you know, and extend actually to the reporting companies, because as you mentioned, I think materiality assessment is not really always straightforward or obvious. And even in the context of financial reporting, I think it has never been, you know, really clarified or defined. And at the end of the day, now also with sustainability reporting and the double materiality principle, this is something quite new. And hence, you know, indeed can be challenging for companies, you know, how to do that. But maybe just one thing also to clarify, actually, currently EFRAG is working on a non-authoritative guidance on how to run materiality assessment in line with the double materiality principle. And actually, it will be also published for a consultation later on this year before being finalized. However, I think the points you mentioned are still quite valid in a sense that this guidance is being developed for all the standards. So my understanding is that it's very unlikely that it would be, you know, targeted for specific disclosures or specific topics only. And the challenge also is the time, right? Because the intention is actually to finalize this guidance at least some months before, well, the CSRD and ESRS is actually kick in January 2024. So this is also kind of a challenge, you know, to develop something with a fairly short amount of time, but something that can be informative enough for the companies. I mean, let's hope and let's see, maybe, you know, in the future months and years, also with time, there would be, you know, still an opportunity to develop this kind of a guidance that would be a little bit, I would say, more elaborate and focusing, you know, also specifically on some topics, because I think you're raising a very good point that, for instance, here speaking about, yes, how to, for instance, you know, analyze and consider to what extent, for instance, diversity, equity, and inclusion is material for your company. I think many companies could benefit from that, especially that actually for a second coming back to the differences across the member states. I think indeed, as you mentioned, there are also many cultural differences, right? And it also, like, there are some countries also like Netherlands and some others where in general, I think the society tends to be more diverse, and somehow I think companies they have managed to make more progress towards considering this kind of aspects. But for instance, coming, you know, from Poland, you know, I think in Central Eastern Europe, I mean, we're quite behind on this kind of developments, also partially because, you know, I would say societies tend to be much more homogeneous, but it doesn't change the fact that this kind of aspects should be considered.
Yeah, Alexander, one of the reporting requirements is, you know, on pay gaps. But what if a company doesn't monitor it at all and then says, well, it's not material to me, without monitoring, are you then, they say, no, doesn't meet the materiality threshold. So the whole point of the reporting requirements is to force them to look at it to start with. You know, unawareness doesn't equal fairness. And well, in this area, there is still a lot of unawareness. And that was exactly what the reporting was intended to do. So yes, I'm disappointed, to say the least, because once you meet the materiality threshold, the reporting is extensive. I mean, I could live with far less detailed reporting if it is basic metrics. Do you see? That's the weird thing. So it's an all or nothing, and a materiality assessment that is in a black box that they don't have to disclose. I would have been, there would have been made more progress if you would ask everybody to report on five basic metrics. What is your breakdown on diversity in your company? What is your pay gap? And basic requirements are far more telling than this whole area of, so I feel we've gone on the board and overboard at the same time and not getting it right after all this time and work, which is a bit, you know, sorry to be so explicit, but I'm in that sense, I'm really disappointed.
Well, maybe this is something that, you know, we can still park and keep in mind actually for the review of the European Sustainability Reporting Standards, as Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive foresees that actually standards should be reviewed once every 3 years. So maybe this is indeed, you know, something to kind of keep in mind for that. And in the meantime, I guess, you know, the best we can do is indeed try to develop the best possible guidance with regards to materiality assessment. And, you know, everybody will have an opportunity to contribute to that during the public consultation, even if I understand it might be quite short. And at the same time, I guess we can also just, you know, kind of place our hope also in auditors and assurance providers, whose role it will be also to help companies and, well, verify whether actually they have done the materiality assessment right, whether they have disclosed whatever they needed to disclose. So I guess, you know, that's the best we can do for now. And I would say from the investors' side, also, I think investors will keep playing a very important role, right? Also, you know, keeping companies in check and basically engaging with companies with regards to disclosing relevant and material and quality information. Well, thank you very much, Professor Morel, for joining us today and for this very insightful conversation and for your time.
Okay, my pleasure. Bye-bye. Thank you.